So welcome to this free seminar on working with focusing-oriented methods with clients who are experiencing low-energy states like depression or lack of affect. I'm Ann Weiser-Cornell.
And Glenn Fleisch. Welcome, everyone.
And although people are still arriving, maybe we'll get started. What do you say, Glenn?
I'm ready.
He's ready. Well, what we're going to say first is that we're really talking about two broad categories here as we talk about these low energy states. But maybe, you know, Glenn, I have a feeling that even before we talk about that, I just want to say a few words in general about using focusing-oriented methods within therapy. Something you and I have talked about a lot is that these methods can be combined with any form of therapy. That this is not another orientation that you have to replace what you already do. We'll be talking about interventions, suggestions, invitations, things you can do, ways of responding to people that can be blended in to the work you're already doing, depending on the style of your work, perhaps more or less easily, but it doesn't have to be a whole different modality.
Well, you can say that focusing or focusing orientation is kind of a meta modality. It's an overriding or overarching way of understanding and working with experiencing that includes everything else. For example, if you've read the Focusing Oriented Therapy book, it involves other combination, different avenues of therapy. So there are different avenues or modalities on which therapeutic process can move down, and that includes many other modalities, which probably some will combine today.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one thing that people sometimes don't quite grasp about bringing focusing-oriented methods into therapy is that you don't have to tell your client, now we're doing focusing. It doesn't have to be a break in what you're doing with people. That telling the client, now we're doing a method called focusing, may be counterproductive. You're not trying to hide it from them, but it may be that that's not helpful for them because they may then feel self-conscious or feel that now there's something they can fail at, or that may become an issue between you if there's a quality of feeling like they have to please you or do what you want, right?
Oh, yeah. I would say that's especially important too at the beginning of the therapy. Because before any kind of therapeutic relationship is formed, that if the client feels that it's too much kind of your thing type of thing, then there gets a sense, like you said, either of performing or pleasing or I don't know what you're asking me to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's I used to call it, I don't so much anymore, a naturalistic form of focusing, which mm-hmm. means if someone's telling their story, they're describing, let's say, using the first, I don't feel things, cut off from my feelings, etc. They're talking about it, and there's a place in the story. First of all, part of the focusing is listening. So we're always reflecting back. That's kind of a baseline. And from there, there's often a place where you begin to notice something. Yeah, maybe you get a sense that there's something there. And then, so as the therapist or the focusing guide, you are always focusing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning you're in the flow of the field of experiencing. I think this for someone who has difficulty feeling, in a sense, you're, I don't know if this is the correct word, but you're sort of loaning or involving your own body sense to imagine what that person might be feeling. And so, right, there's no like specific technique that says, now we're going to stop and do this thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of being with somebody, and an orientation or a kind of pointer to what we're paying attention to as we're with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of focusing-oriented therapy in a nutshell. And we're especially talking today about lack of affect, difficulty having feelings, and depressed states. Those are not the same. So having difficulty being in touch with feelings is not equal to depression. We're going to talk about both of them today, and we do feel there's a connection between them. But let's start with people who don't find it so easy to notice what they're feeling. And, you know, I've talked to a few therapists, and they kind of get that pained expression on their faces when you say, well, what about those clients who come in and they really don't know what you mean by how did that feel? Like they get this puzzled expression on their face. Or if you invite them during the session to notice how something feels or how it feels in their body, they give you this blank look like they don't know how to do that. Or they say, well, nothing. I don't have any. And those can be some of the most challenging people, those that don't easily find the body feeling place or the emotional place.
Mm-hmm. I have a kind of a cute couple of example where I have a man who comes in and he brings in a piece of paper, and on it he said, my wife wanted me to come in because she looked up online and she said, this is what I am. So I looked at it and it's the...
This was written on the piece of paper?
Yeah, she looked up online, and it's, if you're familiar with the term alexithymia, it's a term that means someone without access, has no words for feelings, basically. And it was actually was developed in men who had psychosomatic symptoms or physical symptoms that had no organic cause. So he said, that's me.
No.
I said, oh, well, so here's one of the principles, and that we were talking about.
Yeah.
So you're noticing that there's something similar here about what's written here, and maybe how some places in you are or operate. Is that, so already we're validating that they are aware of something.
Yeah. So principle number one, even when people say they're not noticing anything, they're actually noticing something. And we can say, oh, you're noticing that. Like, I bring awareness in my body and I just feel a blank. Ah. So, you're sensing there's blank in there. So what they're doing is actually a kind of noticing, even if the way they present it to us is if there's nothing there. So people who have difficulty having feelings, I had a gentleman in a similar situation. He came to me because his wife said, I'm tired of asking you how you feel and having you say, I don't know. And I think he was kind of tired of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd heard that the work we do could help with that. And when I invited him to sense in his body, he said, I feel nothing. And then I invited him to sense what that nothing was like or what more he felt he could say to describe that experience of nothing. And he said, well, it just feels as usual. And notice, that's the difference. As usual is not the same as nothing. So I'm wondering what as usual feels like. And another little thing I sometimes do with somebody like that is notice if as usual feels different in your throat versus your chest or in your chest versus your stomach. If there's a difference between the as usual feeling in there. Because actually, I think the easiest thing for people to feel or detect is a difference. For instance, if you're listening to music, you may not know what two notes are, but you can probably tell if they are different notes or if they're the same note. So in this case, this gentleman said, oh, yeah, in my stomach, it doesn't feel good. And from there, we went on to have him describe the words, and it felt clenched and so on. He actually had a very interesting session where the clenched in his stomach told him a lot about how his life was feeling. So the as-usual feeling had been just, it had been a body feeling that had been there for quite some time. And he'd been ignoring it, like good boys are supposed to.
That's right. So the other part related to that is often I might suggest or even try a little bit of a body awareness. Like we said, sometimes if someone wiggles their toes, notice your toes wiggling, or kind of just let your shoulders roll a little. Notice what that's like. Or kind of breathe a little more deeply in your belly and just sort of let it puff out and see what that feels like. So we're giving a sense of bringing a certain awareness to physical places. And that's sort of a preliminary sometimes. times that people, oh, yeah, I can notice my toes wiggling. Oh, okay. And then notice when they stop wiggling, like you said, Anne, can you sense a difference?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you let your stomach just puff out, just hold it for a minute. And then kind of let it relax and go back to how you usually hold it. You notice there's something different there.
Simple little exercises in body awareness. One reason people don't know what they feel is that they're just not practiced at it. They don't know how to feel, and we can kind of begin to show them.
Right, and another aspect is to be aware of when anything you ask evokes a sort of almost automatic tightening up response. In other words, notice how you feel. Sounds very neutral, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can sense there's something tightened. I've seen this very commonly in disconnected type of states. It's not just that they're not in touch. There's some place that's actively tightening up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to go there.
Now, how do you notice that, Glenn? Did the people actually say, I don't want to go there, or is there something else?
Sometimes. Or part of, I think, being a good therapist in general, and certainly in focusing, is observing.
Mm-hmm.
So you could observe someone's shoulders sort of scrunch up. Another very common one, by the way, is particularly if people are sitting, I'm sure some on the line of may notice this, people will be sitting, and let's say their legs or their feet are on the ground, you'll see that their legs will tighten up, like their thighs will move together, which is a kind of tightening or almost a gripping response. You might notice their arms or hands gripping the couch or the chair a little tighter. So just gently, and this is another principle, by the way, is the importance of us conveying a certain gentleness and acceptance, and that everything is okay. So if you see that, you say, notice there's maybe a little tightening, so perhaps someplace in you doesn't quite want to do this or is scared about this or something, maybe. And again, they may say, well, no, I wasn't aware of that. And my principle is I never press that. If they say they're not aware of it, especially at the beginning, I'll say, oh, okay, I thought I noticed that, but maybe not. Let's go on. But often it will lead to someone saying, yeah, I don't like being pressured, or some part of me gets tight, and they'll notice. Ah, again, good for noticing. Let's see, what can we say hello to that place?
Mm-hmm.
Just let that know it's welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
And also, and I know this is important, and there's some good reason that place is scared to let you feel something or be in touch with your body.
Yeah.
Certainly in states of trauma, sexual abuse, physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I was working with a gentleman who regularly was physically abused as a child by his father, and he was often punched right in the solar plexus, like the wind knocked out. So during these states, he will feel tightness in his solar plexus.
Mm-hmm.
And just a sort of automatic tightening response to anything that gets close to that area.
Mm.
So these are the little clues that there's some good reason that place needs to protect itself by tightening or staying away from it. So I think that the principle is we have total respect for those protective or guardian places, the
mm-hmm.
reactions.
Yeah, we're modeling that respect. We have respect, and in doing so, we're inviting the client to also respect their own inner safety guardians. I think safety guardian is a wonderful term for what has often been called resistance. Something in the person that shuts down or wants to break off inner contact, like every time I get close to that, I fall asleep, or every time I get close to that, I start daydreaming. Oh, okay. Well, sounds like maybe something in you wants to slow down right here, not go too quickly or not. Let's just maybe acknowledge that. So we were talking earlier about how difficulty feeling could have to do with not being used to feeling, but I think the other big reason for difficulty feeling can be what we're talking about now, that there's something in the person that's guarding against what might happen if they get into what they feel would be too much feeling.
So it kind of relates to what we talked about last time, which is guarding against those overwhelm states that could happen. And so sometimes there actually is a wisdom, or there's always a wisdom in that, and also in the therapist aligning with that. Often if you align with the so-called resistance or safety guardians or places, then those feel accepted. And then often if there's an alliance there, because most of the time those are the places that have been battered, literally, or like the wife or the other person, you're always withdrawing or avoiding. Every time I try to talk to you, right, you're going off in your corner or shutting down. And so those get a bad name type thing. I have a guy I work with like that. Actually see them in a couple, and as soon as he feels or that place in him feels pressured at all to express a feeling or get in touch, you can see it's like a pall goes over this, like almost a glazing, if you can imagine, and then the person goes not there, so to speak.
Like he's checked out.
Checked out. And accepting that checkout and welcoming it is, something there saying this is too much,
Nothing really felt the need to pull back right there. So our respect for that is so powerful for people. Rather than allying somehow with the counterpart, an impatient or drawing out, well, maybe you could evoke that feeling. Unfortunately, this would be quite different. I mean, I think that, you know, some methodologies that evoke feelings, such as pounding pillows or breathing more intensely. I don't know if those methods are in vogue anymore, but they were in the 80s and 90s. That really it decreased the sense of safety for people by eliciting catharsis, which can give a temporary relief, but reduces that that sense of the overall safety of the container, of the holding space. The respect for that those parts that don't want to go further at that moment is very powerful. My colleague Barbara McGavin likes to say, we're going to let that part say when we go further. And the slowest part or the part that doesn't want to go further be in charge of saying when we go further. And then almost always within a minute or so, there's a letting go and a release and a moving, because that has eased that whole inner conflict. Let's also mention thinking, Glenn, right? Often this kind of client seems to be intellectualizing a lot, or there is a kind of client who's intellectualizing a lot, saying when we invite them to notice how they're feeling, they say, well, I think. I think it's, or it must be, or it's probably. So those phrases like it must be or it's probably are probably even better signs of an analytical or thinking process than even the word I think. Understandable, again, for all the reasons we've been talking about. It's hard to feel nothing, and so instead of that, the person speculates on what it might be, and they certainly get a lot of support from our culture, which really kind of demands that you come up with an answer right away instead of doing what we need to do in focusing, which is take time and sit for a while in a murky, I don't know what this is kind of space.
Which is, you would say, is precisely what some place is avoiding, is that not knowing, that being in that limbo.
Yeah.
So
it's uncomfortable.
Or opinions or things like that provide a certain, that's where it stands.
Yeah.
I think this, or I have this value, or this idea, so I know that. So again, thinking is welcome in this process here. We say that focusing is not about thinking, it's about putting aside your already formed thinking.
And at the same time, we welcome it, because what the person already knows is just as much a foundation for where they're going to go next as anything is. So we wouldn't say to somebody, put aside your thinking, even though that's often what's talked about. Instead, we'd say, okay, so here's what you do know. You know that it's this, or you know that she said that. Let's have that here with us. As you also take your time to sense freshly how that feels right now, There may be a sense of something that hasn't been put into words yet, that maybe you have a sense of it, but you've never actually formulated it. That may take a little time just to sit with, something like that.
Now, with thoughts, if you're aware, many people have very strong energy or affect that's embedded in the thoughts. So someone says, I feel strongly about X, which means I have this strong opinion, let's say. Or, my wife keeps telling me I don't feel, but I tell her what I think. What does she want from me? That kind of thing.
Right.
Uh-huh. So I'm noticing there's a kind of strong energy there about that. Yeah, like maybe someplace in you is annoyed that she doesn't. So in other words, within thoughts, there's something there. And one of the methods, or I wouldn't say methods, but ways that my own focusing helps immensely is that you imagine that what the client has shared is in the spirit of focusing, even though you know they really haven't done any focusing at all, or very little. So if they say, well, my wife says I don't feel, but I tell her how I feel all the time, right? So they're just telling a story, right? But you imagine, in the spirit of focusing, using your own body sense, what that might feel like. So I imagine maybe, you're probably, someplace in you is kind of annoyed maybe about that, or maybe a little irritated. So you offer maybe two or three different possibilities of what you imagine that person might be feeling if they were focusing. And you offer that. And if one of them picks up, of course I'm annoyed, like as if that's sort of a given. So maybe we can stop and sense that. Now, if none of them take, or the person doesn't know what you're talking about, or they go back to what they think, then you just, again, go back to, so you're thinking X. So that's part of how I use my own focusing with people in that sense. I will imagine what they're feeling and offer that.
Yeah.
Possibility.
Yeah. Good. Well, we're about halfway through our time. We want to move on to the other half of our talk today, which is about depression or depressed states.
I would just add one more thing that's exciting, and that is... I know, Anne, it's something you and I have been interested in, and that's part of why we're offering these two seminars. There's a lot in focusing world in general about learning focusing in different styles or ways. But other than, I think, something with trauma, there isn't very much on working with specific client issues like anxiety and trauma and overwhelm today, disconnected or depression. I think that's very needed, and that's what a lot of what we're going to focus on in this retreat and the training is how we apply these wonderful tools in our way of being to very difficult real-life client situations. And that's really the art, skill, and creativity of yourself embodying this knowing as well as working with people who may not know anything about focusing and really aren't there for focusing. They're there for help with their issues and problems. So,
and this is what we're showing now, that we are going to talk specifically about working with depression or depressed states. You were saying, Glenn, when we talked earlier, that there's a connection between difficulty feeling, the kinds of clients we were just talking about, and depressed states or depression. Can you say more about that?
Well, like you said at the beginning, one doesn't necessarily lead to the other. However, in a sort of experiential sense, if we consider depression, not in any clinical terminology, but in an experiential way, think of it literally as what it means, pressed down, depressed, that often these disconnected states doesn't mean that the body isn't registering or carrying or holding all kinds of different energies or burdens or pains or feelings, and so it's as if the person's body is carrying this heavy weight. If you ask people about depression, or if they come in to see you in a first session or second, and they say they're depressed, and you ask, or how can you describe what you're aware of that lets you know that? Often things will come like, I have no joy, it's hard to get out of bed, I feel lethargic, you know, I feel like I'm carrying a heavy load, or I feel burdened down, I feel kind of out of sorts, often stressed in the body, and these kinds of things. So that's where I see the connection.
Mm.
You could say the usual ways the body or the organism might want to discharge or release or work through these kinds of states isn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's some big block or blockage. And I think the principle in working with depressed states, and this is very important at the beginning because many people come in with a kind of sense of hopelessness. I'm at the end of my rope, I don't know what to do, is to sense and help connect with even the tiniest bit of life energy that might be there.
Hmm.
What we mean by life energy would be any little bit of movement. And if you ask people to describe themselves or their situation or even their symptoms, often it will reveal itself to you.
So you don't ask people, do you feel some sense of life energy?
Oh, no.
That just would get a big no from them.
No, in fact, I think that would be one of the worst things because they're already saying they feel down and low, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds Pollyannish, you know, or like
yeah.
Doing some kind of Andrew Carnegie counseling. Well,
yeah.
Feel good. That's what they can't you just pull yourself out of it?
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. No, as an example, you know, a gentleman that I saw said that he has been in a major depression for years, which has only gotten worse, to the point that he's not working and doesn't have any energy to get out of bed, although he will, but there's no joy. And you could see it even in a postural sense. As he's saying, it slumps down. So I noticed that, and I'll say, imagine it's almost kind of like something in you is carrying a heavy burden, maybe, something like that. Is that right? And he'll go, yes, I have all these high expectations, and I come from this wealthy family, you know, and this kind of thing. Oh, so I imagine that's kind of difficult to have all those expectations. And, of course, a part of that person is aligned with those expectations. So, in other words, there's a critical, like, you're not doing enough, you're not working, you're not bringing in any money, and that. So I just asked him, so what kind of things do you do during the day or week, just general? He says, is there anything you kind of like to do at all? He says, I like to drive in my car alone. Oh. So maybe we can sense what that's like. He says, well, when I'm alone in my car, nobody's bugging me. Oh, I like to drive in the country, and I look out at the scenery. Oh. So I wonder if you get a sense of what that, maybe what that whole thing might feel like. And he actually did that. He closed his eyes and just went in. He says, it feels kind of warm. Hmm. So can we just notice that sense of warmth? And then it went from there.
You notice when the client, I mean, I'm just imagining that the client, when he first told you, I like to drive in my car in the country, there's a little edge of, now you're going to tell me I'm not supposed to do that? Because that's probably what he gets from his friends and family and from a part of him. You know, you're not supposed to take time off, or that's pretty much of a waste of time.
Yeah.
And then when we...
From your problem.
And when we...
You're running away.
Mm-hmm.
Life says you're always, you know, avoiding and running off, you know, to be by yourself. And
but when we respond completely positively, oh... Well, that's a time when you do feel good, when it does feel kind of good. That's really a switch for them. So it's very similar to the principle we pointed to earlier. It's really the same principle of acceptance, modeling acceptance and respect for what is there and listening for that. You had that other great story about the woman who pulled the covers over her head, and I think that's the same principle.
Oh, yeah, that was... a similar situation, but I'd say even more severe, where a woman had attempted suicide and had been alcoholic and had been hospitalized. And, you know, when she came in, she said, I'm scared of everything. I feel a lot of shaking on the inside. She said, it's like I'm not really present in the world. I'm more like outside of everything. And she mentioned something about a painful wound inside, but she doesn't want to go there. And she said, all I really want to do is get into bed and pull the covers over my head. That's all I want to do. And then the next thing, isn't that terrible?
Right. Obviously, you can't do that all the day.
I said, yes, I understand that overall, in the long run, you would really like to be able to get up and live life. Yeah. But let's just sense maybe there's something in that pulling the covers over. Maybe there's some wisdom there, some place in you knows or feels something. So I said, would it be okay maybe to just sense into that? And she said, okay. And when she focused on that pulling the covers, first she had an image of being a little girl in the room with her mother and father. And then she said, I want to go back to that room. Apparently she had been abandoned. She was very young. And so when I said, so maybe noticing what that feels like, it feels secure, warm, you know, etc. So maybe that's kind of like the same sense of pulling those covers over. She stops. Yeah, and then she sort of burst into deep sobbing. And she said, you mean that it's okay that I go under the covers? Oh, absolutely. Not only okay, that something in you knew more than we did about what it needed.
Mm.
And so she was sobbing and so grateful that this was the first time she actually sensed that there is life energy or life maintaining wisdom in that pattern.
There's a knowing of what's needed. And from Eugene Genlin, we get the principle that the organism always holds a knowing of what's needed. And sometimes people who are deeply depressed are really hanging on to a knowing that something's missing, that it wouldn't be right to be cheerful. There's something deeply wrong or very, very missing for them. And if we can view or respond to them in such a way that respects that knowing, you have a deep knowing. Well, I don't know. Well, but in your organism, even if you couldn't articulate it or know it consciously, you really have a deep knowing that something is missing and what would be right instead. Well, yeah, I guess if you say it that way, it's true. I do know something's missing. And notice how positively that points without at all being, like you say, Pollyanna-ish or trying to cheer up, which is really not what's wanted at all. But while fully acknowledging what feels so bad, there is a pointing toward the life energy that is there. Another way to say life energy is a knowing of what would be right for the life of the organism. We have a couple of questions that have come in, Glenn.
Okay.
One woman asks, she herself has low energy and depression, and it can be challenging for her to be with others who are low energy and depressed. So if she's working with someone else as a practitioner, as a facilitator, and it sort of triggers or reminds her of her own, she can feel her own aliveness being drained. Any suggestions about that?
Okay. I can give it a go if you want.
Yes, or I mean, what I might say about that is that, you know, we haven't mentioned this much this week, but the concept of self in presence or presence, being in presence as the practitioner, very, very important. You mentioned it a little earlier, Glenn. Our own being in touch with ourselves, our own self-care, and perhaps taking as much time as possible before the next client comes in to feel your body and to acknowledge what has been stirred up for you by the last client, not to try to push that away, push it down. What might you say, Glenn?
Yeah, a couple of things. Yes, everything you said is right, that to almost like doing before, if you know you have a client that's coming in like that, might trigger your own states, which is inevitable. I mean, whether it's that or, for example, if a client is very aggressive and gets into angry states and you have a particular place in you that's scared of anger or aggression, same thing. That we want to form the most solid, grounded presence for ourselves, so that there's a place that's in touch with that part of you that's kind of can feel itself getting drawn in to that.
Put a gentle hand inwardly, silently, on the place in you that's getting scared. And of course, doing your own focusing with a partner or a guide at other times. Very, very important for this.
Yes. And the other thing in a positive sense is that you can always incorporate your own knowing in a shared way with the client too sometimes. Not that the therapy is for the therapist.
But you've gone through what they're going through, and that can really help them to hear.
Yeah, there is a way to say or sense that, I imagine it's kind of like this, because you're really going from your own in-touchness with that place in you as well. So you're kind of modeling that it's also all right, that there's nothing, quote, wrong or bad about that.
Sometimes I, too, feel like the world is pressing down on me like a heavy weight. And sometimes I, too, am not sure. I get identified with that place in me that doesn't know if they'll ever get out of it. And that can be a nice bonding between you and that client if it's done while you're in that state of presence. We have another question, Glenn, connected to what we were saying earlier about the person finding that positive energy, like the person who likes to drive in the woods, or the person who likes to pull the covers over their head. Somebody wrote in to say, well, what if their enjoyable moments in the day are when they use alcohol or marijuana? Do we use that in the same way as pulling the covers over the head?
Absolutely. In fact, I was going to say that before, that I work a lot with, in many depressed states, I was going to say this earlier, but thank you for that reminder, that it will come out in many different ways, and one of them is drinking. More marijuana use. Sometimes it's called what's classically called acting out behaviors. In other words, the person's energy gets identified with a part of them, and then they act out from that place, not their holistic self and presence that we would want, ultimately.
There's even things like getting into fights or even hitting someone else that can be acting out behaviors like that.
Yes, all of that. And I had a client who regularly would go into rages, break things, and then go into a terrible, depressed, guilty state. Go on for a long time. So yes, for example, with drinking, again, I might align with that place in them that needs to drink. And say, let's notice what that feels like.
What's it trying to help you feel by having you drink? Noticing what that's like as you sit here right now. And it's very similar to the woman pulling the covers over her head.
Yeah. And often people will say, I get a warm feeling in my belly, kind of relaxes me. So let's sense that. Sometimes it goes the other way. Just by being in presence, and I do a lot of movement and body-oriented work, through that the person will say, gee, I feel a warmth in me. That's just like what it feels when I have that first drink. Sometimes it goes the other way. That by being in a certain presence and letting their body move and express, then the wisdom of that place comes through their sense that that's what it's trying to help them accomplish. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that we necessarily are saying that it's okay to drink or use cocaine or whatever. And that's where it gets kind of tricky.
But I think we, look what's happening. They're able to access those same states sitting here in the office. This is the opposite of believing that you need to drink in order to feel this warm, relaxed feeling in your body. You're noticing that you're feeling that right now. And although addiction to substances and so on is a very complex area, we should do another call on that one, Glenn. At least we can say this much about it. The fact that you can access those states, those same states, while sober or straight, begins to break the chain of that addiction. It adds to the empowerment of self and presence, which is not a needing to do that.
Yeah, and that's the other part, Anne, I would say to that question, and that is I always tend to work also on that empowered, grounded presence, not just
right.
particular problems. When I say work on, that itself becomes an important part of our session, because often that's what's lost in the so-called, you know, in the real world, so to speak. They may feel it in the session and feel, you know, your own presence provides safety, and right? And then when they go out in their, quote, real life, it's as if that's gone. And then they go, you know, then that other place takes over, et cetera, et cetera. So showing that they're able to contain, hold ground, feel some strength.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman yesterday just like that, where she often goes into depressed states. And she had a sense that the lower part of her body was, for the first time, and she likes to do standing work, she was standing, she could feel a strength in her trunk, in her, where the upper part felt all disconnected and depressed. But it was feeling that her lower part was strong and grounded, let the upper body kind of feel that sense of how it does get sad and overwhelmed and down. So with addictions or drinking, or that would be very, the same principle.
Mm-hmm. So those enjoyable states, the sense of warm, positive, pleasant, strong states, that's self and presence. That's increasing the person's ability to act in a balanced, mature way, even after they leave the session. And it's a lovely thing. Let me read you another question, Glenn. This is connected to what we were saying earlier about the parts that close down and stop a client from going deeper. This person says, I have a client who's merged with the part that wants to know her feelings. So that this client comes into the session and says, I just want to know how I feel. But when we go in, that we'll have headaches or nausea, which seem to be, this is what our questioner is asking, that seems to be a part that's what we call a safety guardian. And the questioner says, I suggest that she be with those places, the part that's bringing the headache, the part that's bringing the nausea, that doesn't want to go further, but it's still quite painful, and wants to know what we would suggest.
Quite painful?
It's a quite painful headache, for example.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't ease just from being with it. You know, what I would say about that is that the part that wants to know the feelings, the person's been identified with that. And that's why the other part that needs things to slow down, that needs to protect from going too deeply into feelings, it has to come in almost a somaticized way with headaches and nausea, rather than in some more peaceful, you might say, way. It has to come as a headache because the person's so identified with the side of her that wants to know the feelings. Now, I think what would be productive there is helping that person disidentify from the wanting to know the feelings. And really, again, helping that person find self in presence. I would say things like, and so something in you is so much wanting to know how you feel. It even gets impatient with the parts of you that bring in headaches and wants to slow down. And maybe you could give a big hello to something in you that's wanting to know your feelings, that feels impatient with having to slow down. Maybe you could feel your seat in the chair, your feet on the floor, and how you are that larger being, that larger container, that doesn't have to be either one of these parts inside of you. I would spend a lot of time establishing self in presence because I suspect that the headache is not attributable only to the part that doesn't want to feel, but to the conflict, to the impasse between a part that doesn't want to feel and the part that insists on feeling. What would you say, Glenn?
How could you argue with that?
There you go. He agrees with me.
The only thing I might add there is, yes, I would, whenever something seems out of balance and the you, the self, doesn't feel in containment mode, then I almost always will do what you're suggesting in some either physical way. Say, let's come back to self and see. Kind of like, maybe let's notice what this headache, this aching or pain in your head is telling us. I imagine maybe it feels pressured somehow.
Mm-hmm.
See what it's telling us there.
Mm-hmm.
It may
right.
say, telling me, yeah, it feels too much pressure.
That's very see good point.
And so you say, oh, so maybe if we, yes, we both agree, we really want to help you be in touch with your feelings. And that place, like you said, is very impatient, and we're aware of that. Go to it. But if there's a somatic place like a pain or a headache, the other thing I do sometimes is I'll say, notice places in your body that are not in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can hold those place, that place that is.
Mm-hmm.
And
the point I'm hearing in what you're saying that I just want to emphasize is that just saying hello to something is only the beginning. It might not ease yet or ease only a little, until it has a chance to reveal more in the quality of holding it within relationship inside, letting it know you're with it, letting it know you're open to sensing how it feels, maybe it feels pressured, or what it's worried about, what it's not wanting to have happen to you, and that may be what it needs to really begin to shift. We have only a few more minutes. Let's see if someone wants to ask a question in person. And now, who's got a question? Say your name.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is Sharon. Hi.
Hi.
My question is, when you're working with a client and you're drawing them out of this space of imbalance and you're helping them get to self, that's step number one that we talked about. After you work with them on getting to a space of self, Glenn or Anne or both of you, could you run us through some simple sets of questioning?
You mean once, you're drawing them out of a place of imbalance, is that what you said?
Well, you just had talked a little bit about a few minutes ago, you know, whenever something feels out of balance.
Oh, right.
You talked about Glenn coming back to oneself and working through that, which we've talked about, you know, on the last call a little bit. And then can you run us through some examples of real questions that you might use that will continue on that path?
Okay, I understand. I just want to say briefly that we don't ask questions, but I understand the essence of the caller. That is, the next steps after helping someone be self in presence is that there's an invitation to something inside that has a reaction or holds the felt quality of the situation the person is going through. So how that is for them. And it's something that they had come to therapy to want to work on, or to want to work through, or to change. And from self in presence, the invitation inside is to the feel of that, the felt quality of what it is that they're going through or that they want to change. And that comes as a body sensation. And that's then described, and so on. And you can find out more about the steps or stages that we go through in focusing. My book, The Power of Focusing, page 44, has a summary of those stages. The Focusing Students and Companions Manual by myself and Barbara McGavin talks about the stages that we go through in focusing. So these calls, which have been very brief, have assumed kind of a knowledge of those things, because we've just been talking about the difficulties or the obstacles to doing that. But the actual way that you help somebody go through a focusing process, obviously we're not going to have a lot of time for that right now. We thank everybody. We thank each other. We thank Gene Genlin and ourselves and our bodies. We'll be posting online how to listen to this call again or how to tell other people to listen to this call. And everybody have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.